Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
I really thought that I was going to start today's program with the LA Lakers and their come from behind win over Houston last night. And the fact that if we were to look at one game where their entire season turned on, it might be that. However, I am not starting with that because there is breaking news. Breaking news coming out in the last few minutes, and this is a news bulletin. There is not a lot of detail at this very moment, so what I'm going to do is simply read this report from TMZ. TMZ reports, and I quote, New England Patriots owner Robert Kraft is a wanted man. Cops say they've issued a warrant for his arrest as part of a recent prostitution, human trafficking sting operation in Jupiter, Florida. The report goes on, and I quote, cops say 77-year-old Kraft will be charged with soliciting another to commit prostitution. Officials say Kraft is accused of soliciting a prostitute on at least two separate occasions. Cops say they have obtained evidence from body cam video and surveillance that has been conducted over the last several months. The report goes on, quote, officials say Kraft was driven to the spa by a chauffeur. Multiple law enforcement agencies were involved in the operation, including Homeland Security, the IRS, the Jupiter PD, Palm Beach Sheriff's Office, and more. Officials say the women accused of running the sex trafficking ring operated out of local spas, which touted themselves as massage parlors. The report goes on, quote, the investigation took roughly 8 months. Officials say they have identified more than 100 men suspected of being, quote, Johns. End of quote. So that's the report from TMZ. This is so new that the TMZ article post has another half sentence at the end and at least one typo in the middle. Like, they wanted to post it, and they wanted to get it out there so quickly, they didn't even finish the article. They didn't finish the whole thing. That's how excited they were to push that out. Look, here's the thing. And again, that's just breaking news. I know you're going to want to make your jokes, but at this point, it's really hard to know what's real and what's not. According to TMZ, 77-year-old Kraft will be charged with soliciting another to commit prostitution. Quote, officials say Kraft is accused of soliciting a prostitute on at least two separate occasions. Quote, officials say Kraft was driven to the spa by a chauffeur. So again, it's all breaking as we speak. It's hard to come up with any definitive conclusion or defined takes at the moment because it broke right before I went to air. But if you're looking for my snap reaction, if you're looking for my immediate reaction is this. The hell is that? Is it really possible that the 77-year-old owner of the New England Patriots is going to be charged with soliciting a prostitute or prostitutes and that it wasn't a one-time thing? But it happened at least twice. You want my snap reaction? You want my immediate reaction? Here it is again. The hell is that? I'll have more details as they come in. Now back to our regularly scheduled programming. The hell is that? I'm sure there have been better days to have been Robert Kraft. I would imagine most days it's great to be Robert Kraft. Not today. 1-800-636-8686. And here comes the reaction. Wheelman tweets, looks like you can add another ring to Kraft's accomplishments. I get it. Prostitution ring. Sex trafficking ring. Allegedly. At the Kool-Aider tweets, dear Jim, after winning the Super Bowl, I'm going to the detention facility near Disney World. Signed, Bob K. at Johnny Scabs. Tom Brady won't eat tomatoes, but he'll kiss a guy that nails prostitutes. It's a bit much. It's a bit much. Again, we don't know exactly what happened. We have to wait and see and hear and get more details. I would like a comment from Bob Kraft and or the Patriots, although I know that's not coming. I would like to hear their side. And Hitman Canadian tweets, I guess winning a Super Bowl wasn't a big enough happy ending for Kraft. All right, here we go. Off the rails already. Look, we're not going to be, quote, nailing prostitutes or tweeting about, quote, happy endings. 1-800-636-8686. If you can handle this topic responsibly like I did, go ahead and take a shot. Now, I'm guessing it's been better mornings to be Robert Kraft. I'm looking at Twitter right now. Top three things. Robert Kraft, National Margarita Day, and Bob Kraft. It's like a Kraft Sando. The National Margarita Day is the Kraft Sando. Ariel Helwani is my guest. My man, what's going on? How are you?
It is a pleasure as always. How are you?
Good, good, Ariel. Really good. Let me start off by asking you about GSP. He announced his retirement yesterday. As somebody who has covered the sport for a very long time, what was your reaction to that announcement?
Well, I wasn't incredibly surprised that he has decided to walk away. I think the timing was interesting because when he walked away from the sport in 2013, he refused to say the R word. He refused to say, I'm retired. And so I didn't think that he would do it this soon. And what I mean by this soon is he wants a fight against Khabib Nurmagomedov. That's the only fight that he really wants to go after at this point in his career. And Khabib is suspended until the end of the summer, but he has already said that he's not going to fight until November. And so it's February now. You're trying to get a fight against Khabib. Why not just wait and see how this whole thing plays out? In the end, it was made very clear to him that he's not going to get that fight. We can get into those reasons if you want in a bit. So he decided, you know what, it's time to walk away. He does so at peace, in a state of relief. It seems like a weight has been lifted off his shoulders. He has nothing left to prove, so good on George for doing it at this point.
Ariel Helwani, my guest. I do want to double back to Khabib in a minute, but let me ask you this. I know you spoke with him yesterday, GSP, after the announcement. Before I get into that, I want to take a moment and make it a little bit personal for you. If I had told you 14 years ago that you would be the guy sitting down to interview GSP on the day that he retired in Montreal, what would you have said to that?
Yeah, and let's add to that, for ESPN, which is where I always wanted to work, that was my dream as a kid growing up in Montreal. I would have said that you're absolutely nuts, but I would have said, you know, please sign me up for that experience. I grew up a mixed martial arts fan, and I loved the combat sports game. I loved the fight game. I loved all sports. And I remember when he fought Matt Hughes at UFC 65 around 14 years ago, I told some friends of mine who are not MMA fans that we need to go to a local sports bar here in Montreal to go support our guy. And at the time, you know, MMA was essentially 14 years old and no one really cared about it. Actually, less than that. It was 11 years old. And I went to the bar and I couldn't believe that there was a line of people wrapped around the block waiting to go in to watch GSP fight Matt Hughes for the belt. And when the fight was over, when he won, the place exploded like the Canadians had won the Stanley Cup. I'll never forget that. And I remember going home that night saying, I want to be a part of this. I was inspired by my own guy, you know, reaching the mountaintop, and I want to cover this sport for a living. So he does mean a lot to me, and, you know, getting to cover his career, a Montrealer, doing what he did on the highest stage possible, has really been an experience I'll never forget. So, yeah, yesterday was really special for me. I was happy to be there.
All right, so that's exactly where you were in your life at that point. Where was GSP in his life and his career at that point?
So GSP came into the UFC undefeated. You know, he was a nice little prospect out of Montreal, did not speak English very well, was shy, wasn't very good with the media, got a fight against Matt Hughes. Matt Hughes gave him his first loss, and then he worked his way back up, and there's a great moment in UFC history before it was kind of in vogue to do this sort of thing. He wins a fight and he gets down on his knees and he says, Dana, please, please give me another shot at Matt Hughes. Give me that title shot. I've been working for this my whole life. It's one of the most iconic moments in the history of the sport. He is literally on his knees begging Dana White to give him that title shot. Dana White gives him the title shot, UFC 65 in Sacramento. He beats Matt Hughes, and now we're on our way. Unfortunately for him, he stumbles against Matt Serra in his next fight, UFC 69, which till this day is the greatest upset in UFC history, in my opinion. But then ever since then, he never lost a fight. So at that point, you know, he was starting to become one of the faces of the sport, hadn't quite reached his potential, in my opinion, and didn't go on his long run. But he started to do things even back then that no one was doing, which is kind of common in other sports. He was wearing suits to press conferences. He was just taking the sport seriously. He was handling everything with class and professionalism, and I think that opened a lot of people's eyes.
You know the drill on Friday. Before I hit the weekend, I hit the cardio, and when I do, I am rocking my Aftershocks headphones. They are amazing. Best sounding, most innovative headphones I have ever owned. Aftershocks features patented bone conduction technology. The headphones do not go inside your ear like earbuds that hurt or fall out. Aftershocks rest gently just outside. Yeah, I said it, outside your ear, and produce sound by sending mini vibrations through your cheekbone to your inner ear, bypassing your eardrum. Aftershocks are also perfect if you're out running or biking, since you need to hear. It's a huge safety factor because they don't go right in your ears. Aftershocks are super comfortable. They're flexible, they're awesome sounding, and they're lightweight. I am amazed by these headphones and the technology. In fact, I am never going back to regular headphones ever again. Aftershocks wireless open-ear headphones are the coolest products ever. Order an Aftershocks tech bundle right now and get $50 off. Just hit roam.aftershocks.com and use code ROAM at checkout. That's the word after and then SHOKZ.com. Roam.aftershocks.com. Ariel Helwani is joining us. We're talking about GSP. All right, so back to Khabib for a minute. Based on your reporting, how close were we to seeing that fight, and then why did that not happen?
We were not close to seeing that fight at all, at least not now. His team really exhausted that option as much as they could, and it was made very clear, and I'm not surprised, that the UFC wasn't interested. And you have to understand why the UFC isn't interested. When George St. Pierre left in 2013, after beating Johnny Hendricks at UFC 167, Dana White was very mad that he just walked away, that he vacated the title. That press conference is a very memorable one. Essentially, Dana saying, you know, you owe it to this organization, you owe it to the fighters to keep defending that belt. And George was going through a lot and decided to walk away. He comes back 4 years later and fights Michael Bisping for the middleweight title. And they sort of had an understanding that if he won the belt, he would defend it. He did win the belt, but he got sick. He got colitis, and he didn't defend it. So I didn't think that Dana would ever give him a third title shot. Khabib is a lightweight champion. And even if it was a non-title fight, I didn't think that Dana would give him the opportunity to fight the undefeated Khabib, who's such a big star. It's unfortunate because I think that could have been one of the biggest fights in UFC history. But, you know, for the UFC, I think they're just a little hesitant now to give him that shot. He wins, and then he walks away again. Now what are you left with? This game is all about building stars and building contenders. And, you know, if you look back at the old days of pro wrestling, when someone's leaving the territory, you know, you're supposed to put the younger guy over. GSP's trying to beat Khabib. That's too big of a risk for the UFC, and clearly it's not one that they want to take.
Ariel Helwani is my guest. All right, so he's walked away from the sport in the past. We just talked about that. Does it feel then like this really is the end? And if so, why is it different now?
It really does, in my opinion. He's 37, and like I said, you know, when he walked away at UFC 167, he didn't want to say that word, the R word, the retirement word, and we tried to get him to say it for 4 years, and he never would say it, to his credit. And now he is saying it, and he's saying it proudly and freely. And you know, Jim, better than anyone, it is so hard in sports, let alone combat sports, to go out on top. And for him to go out, you know, with 13 victories in UFC title fights, the most ever, to go out winning a title in his last fight, becoming a two-way world champion. I mean, this is just absolutely unheard of in the fight game, and especially in MMA. No one goes out on top. My partner, a friend of yours, Chael Sonnen, likes to say, everyone goes out the game on a stretcher. No one goes out with their pride. And a great moment yesterday was GSP talking to his fellow fighters, saying, you know, you tell them when it's time to leave. Don't let them, meaning the promoters, tell you when it's time to leave. So, I think it's too perfect, and he likes the fact that it's so perfect. At 37, he doesn't have that fire. Also interesting, yesterday he said that he dreaded fight day. He loved the process. He loved the build-up. He loved the camaraderie, the training. But fight day was an absolute nightmare for him because he was so nervous. And so I think the prospect of not having to deal with that anymore and leaving the way in which he is just like the greatest thing in the world for him. So with all that said, maybe they throw a Hail Mary at him, but given the relationship and the stuff that's happened in the past, at this point, I'd be very surprised if he ever fights again.
He is a journalist for ESPN, the host of Ariel Helwani's MMA show, and Ariel and the Bad Guy, friend of the program, too. Ariel, great to have you back. Thank you very much, and I appreciate your thoughts.
Absolutely. Anytime. Thanks, guys.
You will never wait in line again if you hit up my pals at Stamps.com. Can you believe it? Postage rates have gone up again. Thankfully, Stamps.com can ease the pain with big discounts off post office retail rates. You see, with Stamps.com, you can save 5 cents off every first-class stamp and up to 40% off priority mail. That kind of savings is going to really add up, especially if you have a small business. Plus, Stamps.com is completely online, which saves you so much time. No more inconvenient trips to the post office. And Stamps.com saves you money. They give you postage discounts that you cannot get at the post office, including 5 cents off every first-class stamp. Anything that you can do at the post office, you can do right now from your desk for even less. This is why I use Stamps.com. I use it for the convenience. I use it because it saves me money. I use it because I can buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter, any package, and any class of mail with my own computer and printer. And right now, you can get a special offer, which includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a digital scale. See for yourself why over 700,000 small businesses use Stamps.com. Just go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in Rome. That's Stamps.com. Enter Rome. Ben Golliver joins me right now. My man, Ben, what's going on? How are you?
I'm good, Jim. I'm glad you said we're going to change it up, because I thought you were about to put me on the spot and give, like, my top 10 names for who the bigger names could be, you know?
I'm not doing that, Ben. I'm not doing that. I mean, if you're a clone and you want to do that, I can't stop you, but I would not ask you that. That would not be responsible. You know, I'm not like that.
Yeah, it's a good way to get fired.
Yeah, right? Thank you very much, Ben. Thank you for understanding, Ben. Welcome to my freaking life, Ben. All right, so you cover the NBA. Let me start right here. It is a good way to get fired. Now, you cover the NBA, but you were in Durham on Wednesday night for UNC Duke. First off, what was the atmosphere like in Cameron Indoor before the game?
It's a religious experience. You know, it was my first trip there. It felt like a pilgrimage. The kids were crazy. I talked to this one girl. She said she'd been camping out since January 12th. And, you know, it's just like, okay, you're sleeping in a tent for a month to watch this game. I felt terrible for the students because Zion goes down early. Obviously, I feel terrible for Zion, too. But that atmosphere is unlike anything I've been. The only thing I could compare it to is like a World Cup soccer game. They were really, really turned up, not only for that rivalry game, because it was the first Duke-Carolina game this season, but also for Obama. I mean, this guy, the love that he got from the student section and from everybody in the building was incredible. He's getting standing ovation as soon as he walked in, you know, 45 minutes before the tip. It was just a special night, special place to be, and it was just such a shame that, you know, Zion had to go down in the first, you know, 30 seconds.
You know, you're right. You set that up perfectly. So what was that like when he goes down in the first 30 seconds, given all the hype and all the interest and all the energy? What was it like in that building when he went down?
Well, I'll tell you this. I feel like a knee injury degenerate because I've blown my ACL and I watched all the Blazers go through their knee injuries. You know, Brandon Roy, Greg Oden, the list goes on. As soon as he went down, I was like, oh, it's a knee sprain. I spotted it from, you know, 75 feet away. I knew exactly what it was going to come out as. And, you know, the atmosphere, definitely the wind got sucked out of the building, but they rallied pretty well. And even though they were down basically the whole game, the crowd stayed into it. And so I was impressed by their focus. Obviously, there was a lot of concern, you know, from the Duke bench, from the Duke fans, how serious is this? What exactly happened with the shoe? And that kind of took on its own life. But I think in the building, they were still focused on that game pretty much. You know, and they saw 30-plus from R.J. Barrett. You know, he tried to carry their offense, didn't really work that well. And I think there was some concern from them of, okay, what does it mean for their NCAA title hopes? I mean, it's the number one team in the country without the best player. It sounds like he dodged a bullet and could potentially get back on the court. And Coach K said afterwards that they're hoping to get him back, you know, within the relatively near future. But the timing for them is really tough with the ACC tournament right around the corner and obviously March Madness too.
We're talking to Ben Golliver. He is a national NBA writer for the Washington Post. Now, Ben, you were in Charlotte for the All-Star weekend. What were guys in the NBA saying about Zion?
You know that he got game montage where they have all the famous coaches and the players and they're all just saying Jesus, 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 you know, from that Spike Lee movie?
Sure.
I mean, they could have filmed the sequel in Charlotte, Jim. I mean, I'm not even kidding. It's just Zion, Zion, Zion. I talked to Luka Doncic on Friday. He's going to be the Rookie of the Year. He's saying he can't wait to see Zion at the pros, and he thinks Zion's going to be next year's Rookie of the Year. talked to the slam dunk contest on champion on Saturday night, Hamidou Diallo. The first thing he wants to say is, okay, well, let's see if Zion wants to be in next year in the slam dunk contest in 2020. And then you talk to these, you know, these superstar level players, whether it's LeBron or Steph Curry, and all they want to talk about is Zion's intangibles, his work ethic, his humble personality, how focused he is on basketball, and you know, how polished he is with the media. So he's getting, you know, big time respect from those guys. And then all the conversations that are going on behind the scenes with executives. You know, one executive told me if Zion was in the NBA right now and on his team, he'd be worth 7 to 10 wins per season, like in a season this year. So, you know, that's possibly bumping a team up from the lottery into the playoff picture. That's the kind of impact they see from him. Another coach told me he'd rather have Zion on his team than Luka, just because of Zion's defensive versatility, his ability to just kind of cover ground and really lock in on that end. And then also the fact that you can use him with the ball rather than or off the ball rather than just building your whole offense around him like we've seen Dallas do with Luka. So the praise was extraordinary. It was clear that they wish they could have got him in the NBA this season. And when you look at that injury, it kind of sets up that debate, right? It's like, should Zion ever have been in college? You know, by all accounts, he's having a great time at Duke. It seems like he's the big man on campus. He was loving life before the games and before the injury. But you could also just look at his talent, his body, his profile, and think, this guy looks like an NBA player, and that's certainly how the NBA views him.
Ben Golliver joining us right now. That praise is extraordinary. And for an NBA executive to say that he already would have been worth 7 or 8 or even 10 wins to us really says something about him. Now, one of the things, Ben, that's come up in the past, and certainly more so with the NFL, and it's just something you just touched on, if a player were to shut it down to protect himself, to get ready for that draft, some would see that as not wanting to compete. I mean, what do you make of that argument? And is there any reason to think that any NBA teams would view Zion that way if you were to make that decision?
I think the NBA is, it kind of becomes so cynical to it. They understand it. Like, we've got guys, Kawhi Leonard and Anthony Davis, you know, top 10 players shutting it down during the middle of seasons. You know, Kawhi last year, Anthony Davis, you know, at stretches this year. So I think it's kind of become par for the course, unfortunately, in the NBA. Personally, I hate to see it. I love if guys are healthy, go out there and play. And I kind of feel like that's what Zion's about. I understand there's millions of dollars at stake and you don't want him to get re-injured and you want to, you know, take this thing very carefully. And I'm sure there's going to be people advising him to, you know, just protect his body and protect his draft stock. But I'd love to see him back on the court. You know, and I also think in general, this trend towards, like, you know, try almost like in-season holdouts, like what Anthony Davis was sort of doing or Kawhi Leonard last year, you know, I think that's a bad look for the league as a whole. Adam Silver, you know, at All-Star Weekend really didn't seem to have too many answers here. I mean, his main statement was just, look, if you're going to request a trade, try to do it behind closed doors. Don't make a big fuss out of it. And I think, you know, basically the implication there is, you know, we expect you to be on the court. And I know he directed the Pelicans in the case of Anthony Davis to basically have to keep playing Anthony Davis, and we'll see how many minutes he gets and all of those things. But I think fundamentally, if the league is going to work right, if they want to continue to grow the revenue like the players want and to have the opportunity to sign these huge max deals that these guys are, you know, capable of earning, guys have to be on the court. They have to be entertaining the fans. They have to be, you know, participating fully with their full heart in it. You know, not going out there like Anthony Davis did the other night and have 3 points and kind of going through the motions. You know, that's not going to sell tickets. That's not going to juice the TV ratings. That's not going to help the NBA keep growing as a league. And I think, you know, that mentality shift to me in the last couple of years has been a little bit damaging, you know, in terms of, hey, let's just, you know, take a week off, take a month off, you know, take half a season off if you need to improve your own individual standing. I don't think that's in the best interest of the NBA.
Ben Golliver joining us. He covers the NBA for the Washington Post. Ben, one more thought about Zion. Let me just go back to that so we can wrap that up too. What has to change in order for Zion or a player like him to be able to enter the NBA right out of high school?
Not much. I mean, they've been just dilly-dallying with it. Adam Silver said a couple of years ago, hey, this is the direction that we're going. Last summer, he said he was ready to make the move to lower the age limit from 19 to 18. I mean, that's really all it would take for Zion to be in the NBA right now. And now there's this formal proposal, apparently, that the NBA has presented the Players Association with to kind of, you know, make this rule, you know, the official stance kind of going forward. And I'm sure they'll phase that in a few years down the line. I just don't get why they dragged their feet on it. I mean, it seemed to me like Silver has said he was studying the issue for a while and that he had reached his conclusion, you know, a year or two ago. I mean, just go ahead and do it. I think this is the direction that it's happening. There's going to be guys every single year. We see, you know, one, two, three guys who look like they're ready to make the leap. Obviously, the players have been, you know, kind of pushing for that because they feel like it's the most, you know, fair and just and equitable thing for, you know, a teenager, you know, maybe he's 18 years old, to be able to provide for his family and not have to risk injury at the NCAA level. So to me, it's coming. It's just a matter of the timing. And I really think the NBA probably deserves a little grief for the fact that it's taken this long to unfold.
Ben Golver joining me for another few moments. All right, so before you go, let me get your thoughts on the Lakers. They came back from 19 down in the third quarter to win last night. Given that earlier in the night they were losing to Houston and Sacramento, who's in the ninth spot, was beating Golden State, how important, Ben, was that win for L.A.?
Oh, it's so important. I mean, I feel like every win and every loss for the Lakers right now, that's a big loss. That's a big win. I mean, that was a huge win for them. They're trying to sneak back into that top eight. The Sacramento Kings, you know, they don't want to go away. I mean, it's going to be a fierce race down the stretch. I love that LeBron James came out and said, look, I'm going to activate this playoff mode. I'm going to do it. That is exactly the message that he needed to deliver after the last months of ugliness. I mean, keep in mind, they were basically trying to trade the whole team to New Orleans. The fans in Indiana are heckling Brandon Ingram, basically saying, you're trade bait. LeBron doesn't want you. Lonzo's been injured. You know, Magic Johnson's going back and forth and all these, like, tampering allegations. You know, once again, the Pelicans fire Dell Demps, which kind of adds to the whole mystery of the story. Now you've got Anthony Davis, who's about to go on LeBron's TV show, The Shop, and obviously that's going to wind up being, you know, almost a distraction in and of itself. You know, at some point in all this drama, Jim, somebody has to step forward and lead that team, and there's only one person who can do it. It's LeBron. And I think he has a lot at stake. Like, if the Lakers don't make the playoffs, I don't think he's going to be viewed as the consensus best player in the league anymore. And I also think when you're looking at, you know, eight straight finals appearances in the Eastern Conference versus coming over to the West and immediately going to the lottery, I mean, that's a tough look, you know, for his legacy. And I know he's made statements like he has nothing left to prove, you know, that the finals and that championship in Cleveland kind of secured his legacy. And I think that's true. That doesn't mean he doesn't have anything at stake, because he's also trying to recruit all these free agents or set up these trades this summer, right? I mean, he's clearly got his eyes on Anthony Davis. There's going to be some other big-time free agents available this summer. Do you really want to go to the Lakers if you're a top-five guy, if they're not even in the playoff picture? Or do you start looking at some of these other scenarios and saying, hey, look, there's less dramatic you know, organizations that are in better position to win right now. Why do I want to go deal with all that when I can, you know, look at some of these other teams? All these factors are at play for LeBron, and that's why I was so happy to hear him say that, you know, playoff mode is activated. It needs to be activated for the Lakers.
All right, so Ben, quickly, do you think it happens? As an example, Laker fans might say, yeah, well, leapfrogging the Kings and Clippers is no big deal, but given the schedule they have the rest of the way, how confident should Laker fans be?
I'd be nervous if I was a Lakers fan, but I think he's going to be able to get it done. I mean, I think in the back of his mind, if he looks at his team honestly, he doesn't need to be preparing his body for a deep run to the Western Conference Finals. You know, I mean, this team has just not gelled quite well enough. They haven't been consistent enough. You know, they had some really nice flashes early in the season. But if I'm LeBron, I'm basically singularly focused on making the playoffs and really taking a hard swing at the team in the first round, whoever they would match up with. But, you know, if they get, you know, Oklahoma City or Golden State or one of those teams in the first round, I mean, I think that's going to be a pretty quick series, based on how the Lakers have performed this season. So he doesn't need to save himself, right? He can focus on, you know, treating the next 2 months like it's his playoffs.
Now it is a Friday in the third hour. It is time for Alvy's Week That Was, as we look back on the prior week. Welcome to the jungle. What's going on? A tremendous Monday to you. Yes, I'm here. Nice to be here. It's cracking. Another NBA All-Star weekend has come and it's gone. Final score, one of the teams, a whole hell of a lot. The other team, not quite as much.
Yeah! Here's Curry.
Hey, Jim Rohn.
High bounce pass.
So here's something I thought that I would never say about an All-Star game. Hell yes. Yeah. The game was that good. So credit where credit's due. I loved it.
Certainly
Duke. Mike Krzyzewski is my guest.
You do such a terrific job. It's so easy. It's good to talk to you.
Too,
it's not an interview. It's a good conversation.
Email.
Yoko Ono's birthday. Hey, play. Oh, by Yoko Ono. Oh, I do love that song.
Then I look at Hawk's outfit. He looks like a cheap cigar smuggler.
Nobody wore an L this weekend like Hawk.
I honestly think that I have steez and style.
AJ Hinch.
It's like a spring training ritual. I know camp opens when you call me and ask me to come on the show. So I'm ready for both. I'm ready for your show. I'm ready for camp.
Everybody walks past
the show. I kind of took
to
heart what Goggins said about, you know, the stuff that's going to help you sometimes sucks and you got to callous your mind. I lost 140 pounds a day.
Dude. And I had two beers. I was double fisting. They're like, picture. So I go to put my beers down and one of the guys like, no, bro, no. You double fist with us, Rome.
Now I can finally see on TV. That's cool.
Call me Mr. Big Chest.
Horrible self-gloss. Mr. Big Chest. The bowling ball in Tampa. Thinks that that's working way too hard on nickname.
Call me the bowling ball here in Tampa.
I may sound like I'm 80, but I got the robustness and bedroom prowess of a 20-year-old. Just ask Vic and No Cal's old lady.
I couldn't live every day with the voice going around my eardrum. Made me feel sick to my stomach.
Hey, man, was that Rick in Buffalo or the Macho Man Randy Savage trying to pinch off a deuce?
What was your objection to that? San Diego, reaction! Listening on 97.3 The Fan. Have you been this excited about the Padres since Steve Garvey was there doing what he does? Pumping him out of the yard! Jay Wright is my guest.
Who did the Padres just sign?
Manny Machado?
No!
Yes!
No, the Phillies don't get him! Dying.
I thought they were going to get him and Bryce Harper and Mike Trout.
I wasn't at the Trout part yet, but I thought they were going to get both of them.
Twitter. Manny Machado. Robinson Cano. No impact on the franchise. Holy crap, Tom. Tommy D went there. Absolutely love the guy. I just didn't know he had that kind of fire in him. Denny Hamlin is my guest.
I actually took it easy this time. This is my second time around, so I kind of learned my lesson that media day is not too fun hungover. So.
Yeah!
Emailed.
Hey, Rome. George of the jungle. Watch out for that treat. It's mine. Regards, Brendan Frappuccino. Do you want that money? My answer would be yes. Well, no, actually, my answer would be, what do I have to do to... Oh, you are some kind of dope. That just happened. Fuck. Oh! You all right? Jonathan Abram getting a lot of attention. You're getting a lot of run as potentially the best safety in the draft.
At the end of the day, I do like the attention because, I mean, it's true.
Email.
The 21-year-old sister's best friend? Get a hot tub, Tristan. Sincerely, American Chewy. That hurts me every time. Chewy was a jungle favorite. Tony Bennett joins us.
We're going to be okay. We face some hard stuff, and that even frees you up to have a perspective that way. But you might as well swing for all you got when you're doing it.
Eric Musselman is my guest. Do you go with the candy bar or the crowbar?
You know me well enough, Jim. We've known each other a long time. It's not a candy bar today, I tell you that.
Jayon Brown is joining me in studio.
You got to be on your A game all the time. Derek's so aggressive.
Dude, he's physical, man.
And
right?
His stiff arm is on 99 at all times. So.
Finally got you on TV. I've hooked up to Hulu. You look sharp. Bubba.
Yeah, baby.
This is why he calls every day and talks about me, because when he does, she strokes his fins. That explains why he sounds like a guy about to blow his top.
Kyle Allen is my guest. You know how people can be, man. Like, when you roll out in that car right now, you're getting a lot of looks, or you're not getting any looks at all?
In the Ford Escape?
Yes.
I'm getting no looks in the Ford Escape. I'm sliding by everybody in the Ford Escape.
Is it really possible that the 77-year-old owner of the New England Patriots is going to be charged with soliciting a prostitute? My immediate reaction is this. The hell is that?
The only memorable thing Dan has done in the last year is get his ass knocked out by my guy Big Daddy Beak in Studio City.
Truck stop, hooker, bum set.
Ben Golliver joins me right now.
Glad you said we're going to change it up, because I thought you were about to put me on the spot and give, like, my top 10 names for who the bigger names could be, you know?
I'm not doing that. I mean, if you're a clone and you want to do that, I can't stop you.
Yeah, it's a good way to get fired.
Tony Luffman joining us.
We have the Lincoln Whisperer, my wife.
We just call your guy Jim Herrick. Baby Lincoln, it's Grandpa Jim. Now, Lincoln, it ain't right. All that bad. It ain't that bad.
Let's go to jail.
He shit his pants. He was puking.
Roll! Somebody pull Jay Stu off of Manny Machado.
Keep calling, weakling.
Tell him I ain't doing no unguaranteed
wash day.
Man, I love Sam Perkins.
Anytime. Love coming on your show.
Thanks so much, JR.
Tom DeSell.
Come get some, you bitches.
Non-beige buildings.
Bennett.
Good night now.
Good job, Alvy. Great job. The week that was edited, produced, directed, choreographed by one Alvin DeLauro. Tony Luffman. Tony, what's going on? How are you?
I am so happy to be with you, Rome, and I want to thank you because you prepared me for what childbirth and labor was going to be like. I have a lot of friends
and not many of them were as direct, honest, and helpful as you were. Thank you so much.
All right, so that's where I was going to start, Tony. For those who do not know, you and Kevin Weeks are going to be in Philadelphia for that stadium series, but I want to talk about what you just mentioned. You are, in fact, a proud new father. Before we get into the day of his arrival, how is life with Lincoln George Luffman?
It sounds so good when you say it. I've always loved your voice. But saying his name, that was really a special moment for a proud papa. I am ecstatic. I'm the most happy I've ever been, also the most tired. You know, you've been down this road, but it is the coolest thing ever. I am so proud. I fell in love with my wife all over again. She's been unbelievable throughout the whole thing. Labor, pregnancy, delivery, everything. Amazing.
No, that's a tough, tough gig. Tony Luffman joining us. That is a really tough gig. So let me ask you this. Is it true that when you were at work, or you were at work when you got the news about Lincoln and that he was about to arrive? I ask because I've seen security camera footage of somebody running out of a building, and it looks like you. But candidly, I always thought that maybe you were a little bit smoother, a little more graceful in running. I'm not sure if New York is showing the footage right now, but the video I've seen does not exactly look like Carl Lewis in his prime. Is that you running out that building?
Rome, you're amazing. And yes, I hope that I looked more athletic, too. I've seen that security camera footage, and I've got to say, I hoped I would look like Carl Lewis or Usain Bolt or anyone athletic, but I go running out that door looking like Ed Grimley. It is so humbling, but I totally understand why I was that excited or lacking that much composure. I'm just glad my wife was poised, and she was as calm as she was. When I got home to pick her up, I actually left the keys to our house in the door of our house. I can't believe how absent-minded I was, but it was such an exciting time. Thankfully, the house was still here and all of our stuff in the car when we were done at the hospital. I'm so grateful.
Tony Luffman joining us. All right, so one more thought about that. What's been the biggest surprise of fatherhood so far, or is it going pretty much the way you expected?
Oh, the biggest surprise is that I'm not more effective at soothing our son. Thankfully, we have the Lincoln Whisperer, my wife, who's incredible. I just do the checklist, Rome. When he's crying, I think, okay, fresh diaper. Okay, that's not working. I'm going to try and rock him a little bit, tell him a story about the history of UCLA basketball or USA hockey. None of it works. And then I hand him off to my wife, and she immediately soothes him. The pacifier falls out, and I immediately find her. I'm so glad my wife's so good at it. I'm hoping I improve.
We'll just call your guy Jim Herrick. And he could just be on the phone like, baby Lincoln, it's Uncle Jim. It's Grandpa Jim. And he could just soothe him with that whole thing, right? Let me tell you about your daddy. Your daddy overachieved. Just look at your mom and you'll know that. Now, Lincoln,
that's
it ain't
right.
All that bad.
He
it ain't that bad.
That.
Let me tell you about Tyus, Lincoln. Tyus and Eddie.
Rome, you're on fire.
Tyus and Eddie, Lincoln. We're joined by Tony Luffman. I'm so happy for you guys, Tony. I mean, look, you are genuinely extremely passionate about almost everything in life. I knew this would be the greatest thing that ever happened to you, and it's going to be, and I can hear it in your voice. Let's talk a little hockey right now. I had Tampa Bay Lightning head coach John Cooper on the show, and that's a conversation, Tony, I'd been looking forward to having for quite some time. It lived up to the hype. What do you think of the job that he's done during his time in Tampa Bay?
It's unbelievable. The guy is a lawyer, and my dad is a lawyer, and he coached our Little League team to a 1-19 record because most lawyers are not as gifted at connecting with people, motivating, strategizing. I mean, we're talking about coaching sports, and in this case, coaching the best hockey players in the world. This team, since Cooper's been there, unbelievable. 3 Eastern Conference finals in the last 4 years. This year, they're on a truly historic pace, and they're being led by Nikita Kucherov. The guy went 58th in the draft, somewhere Stevie Y, you should take about Steve Yzerman. He's their best player. He already has 100 points. He is so impressive. I was watching him last night with Scott Stevens. Scotty, one of the all-time great defensemen, said his hands are so soft. It's like he's playing lacrosse out there. I'm blown away by not just the depth of talent, but to John Cooper's credit, almost like Noah with Noah's Ark, where he had 2 of everything. He's got everybody happy, with the possible exception of the backup goalie, Louis Domingue. They're insulated from injury, and he's got everybody on the same page, which is not easy to do.
Not only that, but they are absolutely lapping the entire league right now. They're 17 points clear of everybody else for the best record in the NHL. So if you're them, if you're John Cooper, how do you approach the rest of the regular season?
He is such a good motivator, and he is such a keen mind when it comes to strategizing. I have no doubt that he's going to be able to keep them focused and keep them on this trajectory, because it really doesn't mean a thing. He was there in 2015 when they were turned back by the Hawks, and he knows just how devastating that loss was. He's won at every level, and he's a really interesting guy. You've talked with him, so you know. When you talk with certain leaders in sports, whatever the sport, you come away either really impressed or less than impressed. With him, he even exceeded my expectations, because as smart as he is, he's really able to connect. I think that's his greatest strength. He will communicate whatever they need. They don't peak too early. I think that's one thing that I've heard other people wonder. Will they peak too early? Are they playing their best hockey before they should be come April, May, and June? That's not a concern for me at all because of Cooper and how well he's able to connect with his guys.
Tony Loveman joining me for a few more moments. All right, I mentioned you'll be in Philadelphia tomorrow night for the Penguins and the Flyers in the Stadium Series. What kind of an atmosphere are you expecting for that game?
Unbelievably raucous. I was on a radio interview in Philly this morning, and the hosts were talking about how they're looking forward to 40,000 strong booing Sidney Crosby. This rivalry, they're always compelling matchups. The league does a great job of setting up these outdoor games. The idea that you're going to put the Flyers and the Pens, and especially with the recent history, the last time they played with Evgeny Malkin swinging a stick, fortunately, we root for the health of all the players. Michael Roffel was okay. You don't need to add any fuel to this fire, and that is a lot of fuel to this fire. Plus, both teams are really playing hard because they both want to make the playoffs, and they both have lofty ambitions when it comes to the spring. I'm fascinated to see how this game works out, because there's going to be no shortage of emotion in the stands and on the ice.
And then finally, you're going to be a part of NHL Network's deadline coverage on Monday. The moves have already started earlier today. Ottawa and Columbus agreed on a deal that's going to send Matt Duchene to the Blue Jackets. What is your reaction to that trade and the fact that he is reportedly going to face his old team immediately?
It's going to be fascinating. Ever since Ubergate, where he was one of the central figures, Matt Duchene is a great kid. I've interviewed him, and I was really impressed with him. And when Canada sends a team to the Olympics, they pick who they want. They picked him in 2014 because he is a special talent. My concern is, if you're the Columbus Blue Jackets, you just got another UFA. We all know about Sergei Bobrovsky and Artemi Panarin. How is all that going to work? And yes, it's prospects. I see that he certainly recognizes, talking about Matt Duchene, the opportunity there. It's a team that's going to go to the playoffs. Ottawa was clearly not going to go to the playoffs for Duchene. It's a great chance to be a part of a club that seriously wants to advance in the playoffs. They haven't done that yet. They need help down the middle. Other than Pierre-Luc Dubois, who's gotten to the 20-goal plateau, their other centermen have not been able to score and perform the way that John Tortorella needs them to. Because when you look at the East, Jim, it's rough. You've got to be strong in the center position, and at center ice, Matt Duchene is going to be an immediate help for them. I'm curious to see if he does sign an extension and if they do end up sending an additional conditional first for him.
Tony, you know what you should do? You should go to Torts and say, hey, Torts, talk about whether this makes Columbus a playoff team. You should try that and see how that goes.
He is so intense. We worked together for a few weeks before he left to take this job. I was so intimidated by him, and I found out that in the TV realm, he's really a smart, funny, interesting guy, and he was laid back. We were all kind of nervous. Was he going to snap at us? But boy, to your point, when he's in the coaching realm, it's a totally different John Tortorella, totally different.
Wait, so what do you think, bottom line? Do you think that move, does that make them a playoff team?
I believe they'll go to the playoffs, and I actually believe they have a chance to advance the playoffs. Everybody forget that last year they were up on the Washington Capitals in the first round 2-0.
Sure.
And the game was in double overtime. Caps go on to win the cup, and you and I have talked about it before. We live in a different world if Lars Eller doesn't score that goal. They were close, and Sergei Bobrovsky is an elite goalie. He's the only current goalie with two Vezinas, and that's not an accident. I think he could have a magical spring, especially considering he's going to be a UFA, and he's set to get paid big time.
Tony Loveman, NHL Network host. Tony and Kevin Weeks are going to be on site to cover tomorrow's Stadium Series game between the Penguins and the Flyers. Again, that's at Lincoln Financial Field, getting underway at 7 p.m. Eastern. And Tony will also be a part of NHL Network's day-long coverage of the trade deadline Monday, getting underway at 8 a.m. Eastern. My man, sincerely, congratulations. I will be eager to meet Lincoln George Loveman at the earliest opportunity.
Same here. It'd be great to see you in person. Thanks so much for having me on, and thanks so much for your guidance, because I needed it, man. You saw I had no poise, no composure.
again, I'm going to say, if you can elevate this conversation, I'm more than happy to take your telephone call. Let's go to Casey in Pensacola. Hey, Casey, how are you?
Well, Missy, how's it going, man?
What's up?
Hey, isn't Bob Kraft guilty of what we all do every time we take a girl out? We buy her dinner, we get her flowers, we treat her nice. You know, he's just trying to take the guesswork out if he's going to get lucky or not. He's just trying to get his balls deflated like Tom Brady did.
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
No, that's not elevating the conversation. Bob Kraft is not trying to take the guesswork out of it. Let's go to Houston. Eric in Houston. Eric, nice to have you.
Listen to you since 1997. Thank you for giving me a Vine. Real quickly, clones don't make it funny. I have nieces. I have aunties. I have a sister, and I have a mother. And Romy, what you said earlier, you always said sex is still undefeated. We understand that. And prostitution is the oldest profession in history of man, so we know this. Yeah, Kraft, we know he did solicit sex, but Robert Kraft is not what this issue is about. This is about the tragedy that is human trafficking and modern-day slavery. Now, keep in mind, influential, rich, powerful people, they use their lot in life to abuse, to rape, and to even kill these unfortunate people who, by circumstance of wanting a better life, are preyed upon by these wolves. Now, I'm glad he got caught. And I don't care about Robert Kraft. I don't care about him soliciting for sex. But because he got caught and he's so influential and so powerful, what will hopefully happen is a larger spotlight will be shined upon what is happening in the world, and that is human trafficking. And what is going on in these brothels, because they are taking advantage of these people who come and these people who are actually trying to give a better life, they're complicit in what it is they're doing. So this, for all intents and purposes, Romy, is monitored rape. That's what it is. Now, whether the Johns or the people that frequent those places are aware of this or not is neither here nor there. But the very fact that these people are taking advantage of these girls, these women, who are simply trying to better their lives, and they get taken advantage of the people that know them, is an absolute shame. That's all I have. It's my first time calling, and I'm glad I didn't flame out. God bless you, clones, and God bless you, Romy.
Thank you, Eric, very much. Now, that did elevate the conversation. That elevated the conversation. That's exactly what I was looking for. Let's go to Mark in Boston. Mark, what's going on? Good to have you.
Let's go. Let's go to jail. Hey, happy National Margarita Day, Jim. I guess we know how Bob Kraft celebrated. He went down to Jimmy Buffett's place to find his lost shaker of salt. And he found margarita at the bar. Robert Kraft was arrested in a strip mall in Jupiter. Hey, Bobby, if you're going to chase some choice beef on the low, maybe pick a city that isn't named after a stripper in a damn strip mall. That would be like TB12 opening his new training facility in Bull Semen, New York. I mean, the news says he's involved in human trafficking. This gives new meaning to the owner of Pats. What's next? Is the guy going to try to buy the Bills and the Knicks, too? I heard Rays are for sale. Good thing there's not a team named the Marks. Hey, listen, next time just be normal and assault an Uber driver. Jim, do you think Robert Kraft's jumpsuit will have those fancy white collars like his dress shirts? I mean, I get it. Nobody can score chicks for free when they rock $2,000 suits and New Balances. But I'm going to go ahead and dub this scandal Open Flygate. This dude's not on his first wife. He's been picked up for a DUI, and he's now involved in prostitution. He's one stack of AK-47s away from being inducted to the Dallas Cowboys Ring of Honor. Hey, Jimmy, man, that's all I got. I guess NFL owners only care about kneeling when it's their players? See ya.
Hey, Alvin, you want to run that guy or not? Thank you.
No.
Thank you.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
Once again, not elevating the conversation. Let's go to Matt in Vancouver. Matt in Van. Hey, Matt, what's up? How are you?
What's going on, Romy?
What's up?
Kraft wasn't doing any human trafficking, man. He was just burning some of that Kraft dinner money. But anyway, Rome, that loser Dan in Denver is back. Just bags all over Twitter yesterday, high-fiving himself for ripping another golden ticket. I haven't seen this kind of celebration of mediocrity since Jason Garrett's last contract extension. Let's go down the Dan in Denver timeline. Smack off 23. Dan flames out, gets run, and bitches about it for 6 months. Leading up to smack off 24, Dan miraculously wins another golden ticket during the same show that you, Romy, called him a bottom feeder. Days later, in what can only be described as the most cowardly act in jungle history, Dan calls you to hand you back that exact golden ticket. I don't know what Americans call that, but up here we call that kind of guy a punk bitch. The only memorable thing Dan has done in the last year is get his ass knocked out by my guy Big Daddy Beak in Studio City with a truck stop hooker bum sex blast. Danny, stick the cute undercard smack with my guy Nooch and Cal while my guy Fluke and Fort Collins warms up that smacky choppa, and I'll dog walk your blue collar comedy tour ass back to the minor leagues. You happy now, bitch?
I don't know if he is, but I am. Matt in Vancouver, go ahead and rack him. I think my favorite part of that call was him tipping his hat to Big Daddy Beaks in Studio City. It's so good. Let's go to Maine. Tim in Maine. We'll take some telephone calls. It's good to have you on the show, Tim. How are you?
Good, man. Hey, first time calling Romy. I just want to throw out there, it's a pleasure and an honor to be on your show.
Thanks, Tim. Very much.
Let me just start real quick, boss. I really respect how you're coming out and you calmly just reporting the facts. You're not jumping to any conclusions. But as a lifelong Pats fan, let me tell you this. I fought with every Patriots hater saying Spygate and dumping all the facts about that. Okay, I'll give you it. I'm still going to stick behind you. Then you start coming out with finding out that you're covering up for a serial killer in Aaron Hernandez and buying him a flop house. That makes you a pretty dirty dude. I'm trying not to get heated, Romy, but let me just get to you real quick. If you're going to start doing things like human trafficking, not only should you not be allowed to be in the NFL, not only should you own a franchise, not only should you own a business that is making you millions upon millions upon millions a year, not only should you not be able to breathe and walk on this earth. You might say it's dramatic, but I tell you this, boss man, if he was around me, I'd tell it to his face. He's a bum. If it's true, if it's not allegedly involved and allegedly caught on video, get this man out of the NFL. Give him some nice, sweet silver bracelets. Tighten him up and twist him a little bit and send his ass to the slammer. I'm out.
All right, Tim. Thank you very much. All right. Now, let's just take a deep breath for a minute, all right?
Good night now!